is like a hollow tube, and they run a string through it, and they tie it like a triangle into a tree where parrots land. They kind of have particular trees where flocks of them land. And mm-hmm. so when the parrot lands on the stick with the hollow tube, rather the tube, because of the weight of its head, he falls over and he clings upside down with his claws. And then the parrot catcher comes and just picks it up and drops him in his cage.
Oh, wow.
And then he said, he was using it as an example. He said, like, you know, like, and that's just like us. We, you know, we need some support. So we're clinging and clinging. And then we finally get put in the cage and think, ah, we're free. We have support. And then the rest of our life is like the parrot goes from one side to the other, you know, picking with his beak, trying to find the exit. So, and he's hanging upside down, not knowing that he can actually fly. So anyway, he used it as an example. I thought it was a very cute example. I don't know if that's true in India or not, but that's what he said. So.
Wow.
So can we take, it must, so might be true. So that must be, but I didn't hear. But I could understand here, taking support is falling onto the ego. So relying on the ego is a death trap. Mm-hmm. So that's what my understanding.
Yeah.
So what you have narrated.
I think Ramakrishna Maharaj said that the body is like the cage.
Yeah, the I am somebody else is like a cage.
Yeah.
And he was talking about it could be a silver cage, it could be a brass cage, it could be a gold cage, but it's still a cage.
Yeah,
I am somebody else.
I was listening today to, I just happened to fall upon it. The fellow's name is Bernard McGinn, and he's a scholar on Christian mysticism. But he was, I listened to on YouTube, it was The God of Nothingness. It was just amazing, the parallels. And, you know, the he was comparing Judaism and Christianity, the two strains of mysticism. But the just, you know, it, particularly with Meister Eckhart, who was a German mystic around in the 1350s or something like that, in the Middle Ages. It's just extraordinary things that he says. Are just like, it's like, you know, nothing to something, back to nothing. Just amazing. just really, really interesting how, and you know, like some of the early Greeks, like Dionysius and so forth, just the parallel it's the type of spirituality which in Christianity, they call it, they make a distinction between cataphatic spirituality, which is saguna worship, and apophatic spirituality, which is nirguna worship, you know, which is really kind of like most people are involved in saguna worship in the sense of the form, you know, like the image of Shiva or the image of Jesus or the image of, you know, Krishna or whatever. But then you have this other strain where there's no such thing as that, and that's kind of like the teachings that we've received from the masters, you know, the apophatic spirituality. And so these, he was really speaking about the ones that fall into that category. Very interesting.
But, I mean, the mystics, that's mm-hmm. a direct experience.
Yeah.
So therefore, it'll be in line with all of the, whatever religion or whatever it may be, that's seeking direct experience of that ultimate reality, so to speak. Yeah. Rather than just kind of reading and imbibing and saying, okay, this is what I'm told and this is this, and you know, I pray to this idol or whatever I'm doing. And the mysticism is a direct experience. And our lineage speaks of direct experience, so that you can remove the words, remove the body, remove the worship, all of that, just direct experience of that ultimate reality that you are.
Yeah, it's just really beautiful.
That's, you know, you can read any of the mystics, even some of the Saint Francis writings, that was direct experience. Or like you mentioned, Brother Lawrence, you know, practice of the presence of God. That's exactly in line with what we're speaking of. It's a little different twist because of the understanding and the concepts that come through, but it's direct experience. And that's the whole thing in a nutshell, direct experience of the ultimate reality that you are, rather than theology or, you know, learning all these different sort of things. Or that's why Maharaj says, don't get lost in the spiritual speeches and the spiritual lectures on Brahman, Atman, Paramatman, God, Master, because you are that. So direct experience. Have that experience with your own selfless self. And that's what all the mystics did. Instead of just sitting and saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, study these 10 commandments or whatever and really try to live this pure life. No, it was this mystic experience, this direct experience of that power, that energy, that presence that you are. And then in writing about it from whatever kind of conceptual belief you may be, you know, the filter of your direct experience.
Yeah, it was like they came out of their own experience and then they tried to put it into something where they could share it with people. And so it was just really interesting. But what was interesting was just the parallels and things that they said in terms of, you know, like, it's just really...
Because that's
really beautiful. I mean, it's just like, yeah, very consoling.
It should definitely parallel with everything that we've discovered, because that's the discovery. That's what's so cool about it's the reality. Like, it's not like something that it's our flavor or whatever, or, you know, something that's being sold. We talk about that before too, something that we have to sell, that, oh, you will do this. No, every mystic of every religion, of every anything that has desired direct experience of their own self, will speak in basically the same manner of the ultimate reality. And because it's ultimate reality that's speaking through the body form that's slowly dissolving, and the understanding is being impressed, I am that. Jesus, same way. He had direct experience of the ultimate reality, and when he was speaking about it, people heard what he said and wrote it down from the conceptual belief that this is a person, a holy man, speaking these holy things. And a lot of the different sects in India also do that. This is a holy man who is speaking these holy words and needs to be worshiped as such. And the true holiness is that you are. That, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj had a direct experience with ultimate reality. Ramakant Maharaj had a direct experience with ultimate reality. You are having your direct experience with ultimate reality, because you are that ultimate reality, and the experience of otherness is dissolving the more you remain with your own selfless self.
Yeah, I think in the past, some of the religions didn't want to share that with the common people, that it was, you had to, you know, these were kind of secret, I think, that they, you know, you weren't allowed to, you know, have the ultimate teachings. I guess, I don't know why they did that. I guess because they wanted to maintain control.
Well, and they didn't want it to be like, you know, if I give every single person a penny, then there's no value. Everybody has that. It's the same thing. This the value of the knowledge, the more value that's placed on the knowledge, the more likely you are to seek it, the more likely you are to really try to live that ultimate reality. And I think Ramakant Maharaj has told stories about, you know, in ancient times in India with the guru, you served the guru for like 20 some odd years doing all sorts of manual tasks and like a lot of work before you were even given like some teaching of a little bit. And they do the same thing. If you look in the monks in Japan, they did the same thing. You were a servant. And then as you graduated, so to speak, up the ladder, then you were given some knowledge. So yeah, like Ramakant Maharaj says, it's very easy for us nowadays because the knowledge is readily available. Even more so, it's on YouTube, it's on the books, mm-hmm. on Kindle. You can Google search. If you really want to know yourself and you really want to be, quote, so-called enlightened, it's very easy. Easy, easy, easy.
Yeah, it was, you know, like the a lot of the early, at least in the West, very academic, kind of like philosophical, kind of like, I guess it was during the Dark Ages when, you know, monasteries kind of salvaged Greek philosophy and so forth, when just people who were in the monasteries had the opportunity to study that particular, or just, I guess, had the freedom or maybe the time to to have the experience, maybe. But anyway, yeah, it was just, you know, like, but the attempt to put it into vernacular language was really, really beautiful, you know, like moving out of Latin, you know, Greek and Latin, and moving into a vernacular language where ordinary people could actually hear what you were saying. And so, yes, there's been like an evolution where this knowledge has gotten to be easier and easier. And listening to that today, I said, gee whiz, this is, you know, amazing. All that struggle that they seem to have gone through trying to express what they were going through, you know, the experiences they were having. And here it is, we've got it like directly, simply put, boom, right smack in, you know, our hands. It's just really.
And that's why we bow down to the masters of this lineage. Remember, like Ramakant Maharaj says, Balsaib Maharaj would tie his hair and meditate for 14, 15 hours a day in a well because he desired direct experience of this selfless self, of that presence that you are. And so we have the lineage masters to thank. As Ramakant Maharaj has said, they made it very easy for us. And I think he talks about the fact that we're given fast food now, basically. It's like, okay, now we know that is the ultimate truth. So there's no excuse not to find it. There's no excuse not to remain with your selfless self. There's no excuse to be out in the world pretending that you're somehow amnesiaed to yourself. You know yourself in a real sense. You know who you are. You know that you're not anything that appears. You know that you're not anything that can be perceived. You know that when people speak of Brahman, Atman, Paramatman, God, Master, they're only speaking about the presence that you are. And even presence is just a label where labels are not needed. You are that. And everything you're experiencing right now is a temporary blip. You are eternal. And even eternal is kind of crazy because there's no time. You're outside of time because you're formless. And that's it. No reason for questions, no need for questions. You are that. And everything that you think you are not. And if you remain in the cage, the way you remain in the cage is to acquire body knowledge for the body that you are not. And do all the readings and say, oh, this is the knowledge and I'm very knowledgeable and I can speak about all the different masters. And no, you are that. You can't be put in a cage because you're formless. How can formlessness be caged in anything? Even this body, you're formless.
It seems like there's like a quantum leap, because even all the practices don't actually produce, otherwise everybody in a monastery would be awake. So it isn't a matter of a doing, because that's still within the framework of, you know, a doer. So you it's like this quantum realization that there is no person, you know, there's no doer, there's nobody doing it. It's just it's like an unveiling or something that is beyond the structure of practices and prostrations and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's just like they say you can't become enlightened, but you can make yourself enlightenment's an accident, but you can make yourself accident prone. That's one of those things that they say. So I think that's kind of it.
Well, the only thing you can really do with a body form is meditate, and that sense of presence will be discovered. And you remain with that. You don't go out to the outside world. You remain with that. God's a jealous God. You remain with that sense of presence. And that sense of presence, that's it. Like, if you want to do practices and all that, you could say that all these monks that are told to go do all these practices and all that, they'll get tired of the practices and it'll stop.
Right.
And the easiest, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj has said, Sri Ramakant Maharaj says is even easier. Be with you always. That's it. What does always mean? Always doesn't mean I'll be with myself except when I'm driving in traffic, or except when I'm going to work, or except when I'm going on a date, or except when I'm walking in a mall. No, be with you always means always, always. Full-time job, not part-time spirituality.
That means I have to identify myself as that presence, right?
Yes.
That then it becomes effortless. That means that becomes spontaneous.
You sit in meditation and you feel that sense of presence. You just feel it. It may take some time, because you're going to chase your thoughts. You're going to chase all the things that you think are important and all that stuff, because you still think you're a body in the beginning. But you've been told you're not a body. Now you sort of have to prove that you're not a body. So how do you prove you're not a body? Allow the presence. Cultivate the presence. That's why Ramakant Maharaj says, I plant the seed of reality within you. And now you make it grow. You water it with bhajans, with the knowledge, with devotion to selfless self, and your plant grows. Your presence, the feeling of, or the sense of existence, I am presence, consciousness. You could say, okay, I sit here and I begin, we'll use consciousness instead of presence. I feel consciousness, because there's a subtle feeling, and the thoughts and all that stuff that's appearing within that consciousness, obviously, because the consciousness is formless. I know this because also in dream, when I lay down to sleep, a dream world's projected. It's formless, and yet there's forms appearing. So that's the consciousness. So I sit here and I remain with consciousness. Well, the truth is, consciousness is remaining with consciousness. A subtle sense of consciousness. And when you open your eyes, then you understand that all of this, including this body, is within that consciousness. We're saying consciousness now because instead of saying presence, we said consciousness. Could also say awareness. Like Maharaj says, the words don't matter. And Nisargadatta Maharaj says very nicely, you're prior to the first word. So don't get hung up on awareness, presence, consciousness, I am. None of these matter. What matters is just to be with yourself. Yourself as you really are, because you are not body, you were not body, you're not going to remain the body. So how are you going to remain with yourself if you're not the body? You just are. Just I. I without anything. And that's everywhere. Always. So now you don't have to preach to me about Brahman or Atman or any of the books. I still read the books I enjoy. Right now I'm reading one little subchapter of Das Bodh every night before I go to sleep, because I actually bought it in the book form. I had it on Kindle, But Maharaj had said a while ago, oh, this is a very nice thing, because I like to read just a little bit. So he said, read one little passage of Das Bodh every night before sleeping. Okay, so I do this. But you don't have to tell me about that, because it's explaining the experience that you already are having of your own self. All of it is pointing to that. That accept your selfless self. There's no God, no Brahman, no Paramatman, no master, nothing's there. Nothing, because it's just this presence or a consciousness in which all of this something is appearing. But it is not a thing unto itself. It's the background, that support of all things. And then you know. And then yes, you can read the Christian mystics and be like, wow, you know, they're basically describing the experience. Actually, I just read, it was a very nice article, and I'm not recommending drugs by any means, but it was an article about Johns Hopkins experimenting with psilocybin or something like this to give somebody a hallucinogenic experience. And in that term that they're doing, they're all coming back with this feeling of the body dissolving, the feeling of oneness, the reflection of awareness in an empty mind. And it's like, that's pretty cool. I don't recommend the drugs. And like Maharaj would said, this is like a spiritual candy or a temporary relief. But just the fact that, again, why are all these people having this experience? Because there's only one experiencing the dissolution of the false. And then trying to describe this dissolution in various language, because that's the natural thing. If I'm having this experience, I want to describe this experience. And the only thing that the mind can use to kind of piece together and describe the experience that's prior to it are the way that it knows the world. So it says, I experience presence, or I experience this lack of thought, or I experience it, because the mind can't say, what is this? This, it's prior. You're prior to mind. So anytime that, you know, even these folks that were doing the psilocybin, they were saying the oneness felt like the body was dissolved, like they were no longer an individual. They were just floating, but not floating, because they were within themselves. And it was really cool, because that's the way that the mind describes the experience of remaining with your own selfless self. And now there's no need to describe, because you just remain. And knowing that all these people all over the world and all through time have experienced directly their self in the same way, because that's the reality. It's open and available to all, because it's only one. And it's the one that's experiencing the dissolution of the concept of duality.
It's interesting that in talking about this stuff, sometimes it just kind of arrives. I don't know, it's not necessarily due to the talking, but it's kind of like promotes it or something to some degree, and then, you know, sort of fades away. But it's interesting that it does. I don't know what it is that can talking about it can sometimes bring it on to some degree,
because the speaker and listener are one and the same. There's recognition in the projection, and there's a stirring within both. It's a constant vibration of presence to presence, and also everyone's sitting here and the attention is directed at presence. The mind is not off, hopefully in this moment, on what we might be having for breakfast tomorrow or all the duties that need doing. Hopefully that mind is not directed in that way as we are together right now. So when the mind is kind of, everything's focused, your attention, your focus is just here on your own selfless self. And as the speaking and listening is happening back and forth in this very nice flow, the body concept of I am somebody else is dissolving naturally, because the listener and speaker are one and the same. There is no division. And this is reflected in the knowledge that Oh, so that I am that.
And this, I read a passage from Nisargadatta I thought was real interesting. He says, the self by its nature knows only itself, but for lack of experience, whatever it perceives, it takes to be itself. For lack of experience, I thought was sort of a neat, interesting way to put it.
Yeah, the experience of duality.
It just forgets.
Again, the self knows itself only through the concept of duality and then gets lost in the experiencing of duality rather than just your because there's no experience of yourself. When you say the self experiences the self, when the self experiences the self, that's the birth of I exist. I am the Big Bang, so to speak. That's the, I exist, I am. So now the self knows itself only, but then sees around from the perspective of being in a body form that there are others. And then there's experiences where I get lost in the experience rather than just the experience of existence. I'm now experiencing existing and all the things that come along with it. I'm John, I do good job, I do bad job. Mom and dad, they clap, they feed me, I grow. I'm not growing, of course, I'm the formless presence, but I observe this body that I've been labeled as John and it grows. Therefore I say, I'm growing. That's why you say, I'm old or I'm young. No, you're neither, you're formless. So you're not old or young, the same formlessness that's in this body that was looking at yourself in the mirror when you were 5 years old, when the body was 5 years old, is the exact same presence that's looking at the mirror when you're 80 years old. It's the same. Their presence doesn't grow old, doesn't die, doesn't get sick, doesn't diminish in any way other than when the body, the food that you've given the body that's continually kind of growing, when the body can no longer sustain the essence, then presence no longer is in the body and we say you died. But no, you didn't die. You are ageless, timeless, formless, but the body you were using to have an experience of yourself and otherness is no longer available for you to use. And therefore then, you don't know yourself. You don't know anything because you no longer have that position of the illusion of duality based on this body-based existence that is not actually true.
But also then I know, you know, I've talked about the momentum of the mind and how it sort of keeps us not recognizing presence. But then on occasion, it seems like, I just kind of noticed this today or something, maybe it was yesterday. It almost seemed like something is guiding me. I do these daily contemplations and it's sort of like a neti-neti type practice. Just sometimes it seems like presence takes over and guides the recognition of what is present, rather than normally it's a momentum that's taking me away from recognizing what's present. Then sometimes it seems like there's a momentum, almost like a momentum. It's not really a momentum, but it's like, because it's being, it's already here, but it sort of guides the presence of presence or something to
it's
to,
the mere mind reflection to dissolve presence. The mere mind reflection of presence. We talked about this before. As you remain with the sense of presence, the sense of consciousness, I am existence, it's like a magnifying glass for the ants. and all thoughts that come in between this, you know, you're constantly reflecting presence in an empty mind, because you're burning away the thoughts. You're not getting carried away in the thought stream. You're concentrating on presence, the just I, and the thoughts can come and go because you're concentrated on that center from which all this is arising. You're concentrated on your own selfless self. The thoughts are gone because the only thing you're paying attention to is presence. And as we spoke about before, you look out the window and it'll snow now as we're getting into the winter. The window will have snow over top of it. And as you look out, you'll see the world through the filter of snow. Well, if you remain with your own selfless self and you remain with that sense of presence, you will begin to view the world through the sense of presence, through the I am, through the just I, through the consciousness in which the entire world is appearing, plays for a time, and disappearing.
And at that point, it's like that's all there is, kind of.
Yeah, presence, that's it. Presence is all there is, and yet there won't be a knowing of presence because there will be no illusion of duality in which to know this presence. You just are. And while you're in body form, you can know this presence, and now you're the knower of presence. Well, if presence is so subtle, you can know then that you sense this presence through the instrument of body. And that's beautiful. That's a just I, nothing, 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 nothing. And that's why the next time that the news is very disturbing, instead of allowing the mind to wander, just sit with your selfless self, just sit. And you'll notice that you don't have to think positive, happy thoughts about the news that may be disturbing you. Presence dissolves this. The entire world dissolves within this presence that you are. You remain with your selfless self, and that's all. Then there's no, you know, even you can sit there and say, well, you know, I've been trained by master not to worry. Well, just remain here. Just remain in presence. It kills the thought about the worry without having to do any thinking. Because see, if you sit there and you say, wow, I got through that experience, the sense of doership and the subtle ego takes credit for having experienced this experience without the experience, rather than just be with you. Be with you always. Remain with your selfless self. It dissolves everything. There's no you there. There's no world there. There's no anything there. Nothing to think about. And now from that position, go ahead and do what's in front of you. Do your job. Do your duties. Take care of your family. You'll find you can do it quite nicely without having to think about it.
I think the reason why the world dissolves is because you see the unreality of it. It's because if you're in presence, there's a solidity or a reality to that you see the insubstantiality of all the other stuff. I mean, you're coming from a position of the truth, and so the non-truth or whatever it is, it dissolves because it can't stand up to the realization of what's real, right?
It just dissolves because the presence, there's no thought, there's no thinking, there's no...
Yeah.
It dissolves because it you're not doing anything. You remain with presence.
Right.
And it blanks. It just blanks out everything but presence, and therefore there's no trying to logic or figure it out or wonder or apply spiritual principles or any of the body knowledge, it's blank. It's completely, totally blank. There's no anything. Just presence. It is just blank.
Is that something like Ramana Maharshi's comment about the moon during the day? It's like, it's, you know, it's there, but it's, you know, yeah. Is that absolutely no attention given to it?
When with presence and with remaining with yourself, the self, you can still do all tasks very nicely. Mm-hmm. But you're outside of time too, so you're not really worried about time, other than, you know, you got a nice phone or a nice computer, you schedule appointments. Okay, you know, that's what I do all the time at my work. Okay, I need to be someplace at this time, or I need to join this meeting at that time, and then forgotten. And whenever I'm speaking to someone and it starts to get like, you know, normal type business stuff, I don't sit there and tell them I'm remaining with myself as self, but I just sort of sit. And then from there, I see the speaking happening. And it's just it's a blank. It's a total blank. And it, instead of trying to say, I like to remain with the blank, it's just, okay, this sense of presence, this I am, this consciousness, I'm here. And that's it. That's the only thing I'm seeing. It's like a horse, if it was to have the blinders for racing, it just sees straight ahead. Well, you're just your eyes on presence. That's it. It's just presence, consciousness, I am. And as that reflects, that reflection, that projection, it's just reflecting so strongly. And it only is doing this again because you have a body use, and that's what the body is used for, as an instrument to be able to feel this and sense this and reflect this presence. And all the thoughts are burned away. And you don't have to notice the thoughts that are burned away because you're so heavily in presence that the only thing you can recognize is presence. And then, like right now, you're sitting looking, there's this speaker speaking. I'm seeing this reflection here, and they're speaking, but it's just blank, absolutely blank, and not even a recognition that I am this little guy here on this screen speaking. It's just formless presence.
Well, John, I think we have to...
You're at the 8 o'clock thing still, yes?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Good session. Yeah, very good.